Okay, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm George Tassif with the Federal Public Defender's Office in Peoria, Illinois, appearing today for the appellant Dante Stewart. This is an unusual case involving the appeal of the district court's order revoking Mr. Stewart's supervised release term and sentencing him to a term of imprisonment of 31 months. We respectfully submit that the district court abused its discretion in finding sufficient evidence to revoke Mr. Stewart's supervised release, based primarily, if not exclusively, upon the testimony of one Rob Daggett, who was the only material witness I would submit to testify against Mr. Stewart with respect to the allegations of 3B and 3C of the supplemental petition for revocation that the district court credited his testimony for and found Mr. Stewart to have sold a small amount of crack cocaine to Mr. Daggett on both September 27th and September 28th. We respectfully submit that the district court abused its discretion in crediting this witness's inherently improbable testimony. And I further respectfully submit that if there was ever a witness whose testimony bore the rank odor of an unrefrigerated dead 5 week old dead fish, this is the kind of witness that this court has recognized was a smack of being an abuse of discretion in crediting that kind of testimony. Mr. Daggett is a four-time convicted felon, a drug addict, a manic depressive who for the past 8 weeks voluntarily admitted himself to a psychiatric facility in the Rock Island area. Indeed, on the day he was subpoenaed testify against Mr. Stewart in this particular case, the Marshal Service subpoenaed him at the Robert Young Center, where he had just checked himself in on the eve of the revocation hearing for his bipolar manic depression. Now, with respect to the two allegations, there were nine separate allegations and two petitions. We prevailed on six of the nine. But the two in question were alleged cocaine transactions that occurred in a hotel room on both September 27th and September 28th. As to the September 27th episode, we respectfully submit and insist that there is no evidence whatsoever to support any factual finding that a sale had taken place. Indeed, on pages 42 and 43 of the revocation transcript, and they're reproduced in the government's brief, this is the sole testimony of Mr. Daggett as it relates to the September 27th transaction. And I quote, "As I understand your testimony," and this is Judge Mim asking the witness, "as I understand your testimony, Mr. Stewart sold you crack cocaine on that day, the 28th. Answer, yes. Is that right? Yes. You testified on direct that you had bought crack cocaine from him on other occasions. I think the note I had here was three other times. Answer, yes. Question, when was that? Answer, well, it was a few months earlier. Question, I can't hear you. Answer, a few months earlier. Question, what about the day before on the 27th? Answer, yes. That is the only shred of evidence that suggests that there was some kind of transaction on September 27th. But no follow-up, no testimony, no evidence as to the time of the transaction, person's presence at the transaction, what amount was transacted, how much was paid, who was present, whether indeed this was crack cocaine. The mere assertion, yes, in response to the district court's question, what about the day before on the 27th, is the sole piece of evidence, if it will be evidence, the sole piece of testimony that relates to a factual matter that had to be proven, albeit by a preponderance of the evidence standard. So with respect to allegation 3B of the supplemental petition, which relates to one of the two transactions that the court made a finding upon and revoked supervised release, even under the preponderance of the evidence standard, there is no evidence to support that finding, and this ought to be vacated for that reason alone. Secondly, with respect to the 28th, this is where Daggett says that there was a $100 transaction in the hotel room earlier in the day where he bought a small quantity of crack cocaine from Mr. Stewart smoked it himself, and then later that night the police came. Respectfully, we submit that this witness's testimony is so inherently improbable, and it is totally unsupported or corroborated by any other testimony or any other piece of evidence.
Well, it's corroborated by the police arriving at the scene and seeing the cast of characters assembled, is it not?
Corroborated to what extent as to the material elements of the allegations contained in the petition? Three people in a hotel room.
Crack pipe.
Crack pipe, which Mr. Daggett initially lunged for upon the arrival of the police, which he then said was removed from the premises by their female companion. Not one piece of physical evidence found in the room, not one piece of physical evidence found on any of the three characters here.
Well, the presence of the crack pipe was noted by the police before it disappeared when the prostitute fled the room, right?
According to Mr. Daggett, yes. According to Mr. Daggett, she took the crack pipe and left. Interestingly, though, she was found outside and nothing was found on her person. Nothing was found on Mr. Stewart's person, and nothing was found on Mr. Daggett's person either. Nothing was found in the room but a small piece of plastic. A small piece of plastic that the police themselves didn't bother preserving as evidence in the case. There's nothing here to corroborate the testimony of a man who admits he's a, for the past 8 years.
You know, a tremendous number of people are serving terms in the penitentiary on this statement of witnesses that are incredibly corrupt. Next question. You're on the right back where we were. All of the facts that you've described to us were known to Judge Mim when he ruled on the case.
And even Judge Mim acknowledged, yeah, this guy's got a lot of baggage.
Yeah,
and
right.
If it was a higher burden.
Having said all that, he still decided that what he said was sufficient. And what you should argue is the sufficiency of the evidence as opposed to the credibility of the witness, because that's not my problem.
And again, I would agree that Mr. Stewart is also serving a period of imprisonment here on the sole testimony of someone who, in any other context, Your Honor, would never, ever be treated fairly, considered seriously.
And Sammy the Bull testified against a bunch of mafia people after he confessed he killed 35 people himself. But the fact of the matter is, all of that was known to the finder of fact, and he made a decision. Talk about the sufficiency as opposed to the credibility, and you might even attract my attention, but I'm not the finder of fact.
Well, this court has a duty upon review to determine whether these factual findings are supported and whether they have, as the standard of review would be, a definite and firm conviction from reviewing them that any mistake was made. Mm-hmm. I respectfully submit that this court can look at this testimony, notwithstanding Judge Mim's assertion that he believes the man with respect to two transactions, and say that there is a mistake, especially when a witness has this kind of baggage and there is nothing whatsoever to corroborate or support the assertion that there was a transaction that occurred one time on each of two separate dates. Just saying it is so doesn't make it so, especially when the government has this burden of proof, albeit by a lower standard, to prove that it is more likely true than not true that this actually occurred.
How detailed was Daggett's testimony about the transaction?
Practically nothing more than a bald assertion that he said with respect to the 28th, the second day of the hotel room excursion, that with much prompting, he had Dante get some crack cocaine from another party. And that's the extent, that is pretty much the extent of what Daggett said occurred, a transaction where he smoked and then he paid for the prostitute's services and also claimed, well, I paid for Dante, but since he refused her services, I wanted the money back that he paid Ms. Whitfield. This just doesn't wash.
That's pretty good recall of details for somebody with bipolar disorder and a severe addiction, those kind of details.
Details that relate nothing more than to his presence in the room with two other individuals.
No, but
I think especially here when he says, hey, if he goes down on another felony conviction, he loses his Social Security benefits. It's his motive to put everything on the others, and that doesn't take any kind of wonderful recollection, Your Honor, because in this instance, he wants to protect himself from losing his benefits, so shove it off on the man for whom there's the warrant to arrest.
You were at the trial court. level.
Yeah.
Could you give us a rough estimate of the time that he testified before judgment?
My opponent was also in the courtroom that day.
Well, I mean,
and I think,
I'm just asking his officer to court to make
I would think, I would think 15, 20 minutes.
No, that's
certainly my cross exceeded their direct.
No, I would suspect from the way the case has played out. That does give a district judge, though, a fair amount of opportunity to study the witness, doesn't it?
To see this man on the witness stand admit for the last 8 years he's been in and out of psychiatric facilities and checked himself in just 3 weeks before our hearing in this particular case. It's not credible, and therefore this court should reverse.
All right. Thank you, Jason. How do you pronounce that name? Mahacho?
Mahacho, Your Honor.
Mahacho?
May it please the court, my name is John Mahacho. I represent the United States in this matter. I'd like to initially point out that although Mr. Tassif referred to the abuse of discretion standard, the correct standard of review here is whether the district court clearly erred in his fact-finding, in finding that Mr. Stewart had, in fact, full track on the September 27th and 28th, as well as resisting and fleeing the police. That's essentially uncontradicted in this case and uncontested. There was, in fact, evidence in the record of the September 27th sale. Despite the defendant's contention to the contrary, Judge Mims specifically asked Mr. Daggett about whether he had bought crack cocaine from Mr. Stewart on the 27th, and Mr. Daggett indicated yes. He also indicated at several points in his testimony that he had bought cocaine from the defendant several times before. As far as the September 28th testimony, that was quite detailed. I mean, Mr. Daggett testified that he asked Mr. Stewart to get him some crack cocaine. He bought $100 worth of crack from the defendant. He smoked it in the hotel room with the defendant. The defendant didn't smoke the crack with him, but he was there. The defendant brought the prostitute into the room. Mr. Daggett paid the prostitute $100, which was found in the prostitute's purse when she was finally arrested. And then the police showed up. Corroborative evidence is not required if the judge finds the witness to be credible. Despite that fact, there was physical evidence that also corroborated Mr. Daggett's testimony. When the defendant, Mr. Stewart, was finally arrested after fleeing the hotel room, police found a $100 bill in his pocket, $100 bill, the same amount that Mr. Daggett testified he had just paid for the crack cocaine. That was found on Mr. Stewart. As I mentioned, they found $100 in the prostitute's purse, which also corroborated Mr. Daggett's account of the evening. They found a plastic baggie in the room, which was consistent with drug packaging material. And there was also the police testimony about the crack pipe. There was corroborative evidence to support Mr. Daggett's testimony. Therefore, based on those factual findings, which were not clearly erroneous by the district judge, who had the opportunity to observe the witness, he found that the defendant had sold crack. Once he found the controlled substance violation, he was required to revoke his supervised release. It was not an abuse of discretion. He did not have discretion not to revoke it at that point.
If the September 27th allegation falls away, how does that affect the bottom line?
The bottom line, Your Honor, it doesn't affect it at all. There's still the September 28th sale. That's still a controlled substance violation. It still is a mandatory revocable offense. And the court's sentence certainly wasn't plainly unreasonable in this case, especially considering the fact that the defendant, only 2 days earlier, had his supervision conditions modified for drug abuse and alcohol abuse. 2 days later, he goes out and he's selling crack in a hotel room. Sentence at the bottom of the discretionary range is certainly not plainly unreasonable. And unless the court has any questions, I turn the balance of my time and ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hatcher.
Thanks.
Just ask if your time had expired, but you may have a minute if you wish for a vote.
Interestingly, though, Judge Mims specifically found that there was no evidence to support any finding that any other transactions had ever occurred on any other dates besides the 27th and 28th, when Daggett had suggested there were 3 to 4 other transactions, and the petition went so far as to say there were 8 to 10. Judge Mims makes a finding that there were no proof to support any other transactions besides the 27th and 28th. Therefore, all the proof that was submitted with respect to the 27th is a mere affirmation by the witness, yes, yet that something had occurred on the 27th. And the significance of the 27th coupled with the 28th is that Judge Mims, at the sentencing phase of the hearing, said you went out after otherwise performing in an exemplary way, maintaining employment, supporting your family, and that you fell off the deep end by selling crack cocaine on two occasions in this hotel. Therefore, multiple occasions based upon this witness's testimony, I submit, was a material fact in the judge's discretion, in the judge's mind, to hammer him with the 27 months plus the 4 months he had had on the modification. So for all of these, we ask that the court find it was a plainly unreasonable sentence and remand it to sentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Bassett. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll return to the